Okay, so we continue with the first main part. The second half of the first main part of the tutorial. I just pointed out some vulnerabilities and attacks, and now we look at possible solutions in the sense, how can you develop systems which are secure from the development part on already. And so here first some general guidelines, and then in the second main part of the tutorial I will talk about a bit more technical results using the unified modeling language. Firstly these more general information. So I will talk about a need for conceptual security, for example, about the need for an institution to have policies and models about security, and again related to this view of a computer system as a whole, you need to have also defenses at each level of the system. Then I will talk about ways of security critical system development which ensure that the systems are secure from the start, and then about some selections of software components which may be useful. So what is the problem here? What do we have to do in order to minimize the possibilities for attacks? So firstly, this is really established already that institutions really should have policies and models for their security. The policy part is exists in principle. I mean, there are institutions who actually have security protocol policies, and then, of course, you have to implement defenses. And I mentioned already the problem of firewalls, which are being distributed with pre-configured settings, which are not secure. So you have to make sure that this is not the case. And again, you have to coordinate the different security solutions that exist, because as I said already, the attacks are usually attacking the system at the boundaries between different components, so we have to make sure that this is not possible. And also a more general problem is that you have to make sure that the people using your system are trained well enough, and that you have specialists on the specific problems. So this this remark about the conceptual structure means that the security should be formulated in institutional policies, and it should start at the point where you know what your application should be doing, and then you should consider security all the way down through the different levels which I showed on the earlier slide, to make sure that at none of the levels there could be a problem. The problem is that at the moment you may have different mechanisms at each level, but they usually don't work together, so they may only be separate solutions, and this may also give rise to attacks. So firstly, policies. You may have open or closed systems. For example, intranets are usually more closed, whereas the internet is of course an open system. So you have to find out what you want for your company, for example. Then One good principle is that of need to know, also known as least privilege, which means that only that the user can only do whatever they have to do, so they are not given more rights than really necessary to do their job. And then as part of the policy you have to consider whether the information that is concerned belongs to the company as opposed to, for example, an employee of the company, and you may have different granularity in your security policy. So in terms of the types of access, for example, or the units of access. And another principle for security policy is the separation of duty. So this is related to the answer I gave earlier, where you split up different tasks between different individuals to avoid that one individual can launch an attack. So the possible defenses, there are different things you can do to enforce the security protocol properties mentioned earlier. For example, you may have an access control component in your system, this may also enforce authentication, which means basically identification of the user. Then you may also have an intrusion detection system, which makes sure that if an attack happens at runtime, then at least this attack is being discovered as soon as possible, and then you can, for example, shut down the system in order to avoid more damage, something like that. Then something which happens even later is the auditing. Then the idea is that if something has happened, then it's good to know at least that it has happened. For example, if you have backup files, then if your system gets compromised and the data corrupted, this is bad, but it's still not so bad because you can restore some version of the data from your backup. But it gets worse, of course, if you don't even notice that something has gone wrong, because then by the time you may find out about the corruption of the data, your backup files may also be corrupted, because usually they are being backed up regularly, maybe every night. And if you then notice the attack only the next day, then the backup data will also be corrupted. And so if you have auditing, it's sometimes useful even to see that something has happened in order to still save something. And of course, you use cryptography in order to achieve various security aims. So, if you then consider the how these defenses work, is firstly, the problem is that there is no quantitative measure for security. So this is maybe a difference to the safety critical system area of dependable systems like airplanes or power plants, where you could in principle compute the probabilities that something goes wrong. For example, you know that your hardware fails with probability 1 in 100,000 maybe, then you could in principle add up the different hardware components and then compute the probability that the system fails as a whole. But in security, you cannot do that because, as I mentioned already, the attacker will always attack the weakest link in the system. So whenever there is a possibility, then you have to consider the possibility that someone will find it, and maybe even that this person will distribute the attack information, for example, using the mentioned script over the internet. So the situation in security is in that sense worse than in safety critical systems, because if something goes wrong, it goes really wrong, and it goes wrong again and again. So whereas in safety critical systems you would say, okay, it's happening a bit more homogeneously. And yeah, so you only have selective measures which may help you there. And yeah, I mentioned already there may be different generalities where you could consider security, and you have to consider at each point how good the defense is against internal and external attacks. So yeah, some examples for defenses against network attacks are security protocols, for example. So one example would be IPsec, which this is a protocol ensuring secure internet transactions, or mentioned already SSL, or PGP, which you can use to encrypt your email communication. And also I mentioned already firewalls, where the point is that it is controlled which kind of data packets can come into your own network from the internet, and this gives you some level of protection already. And yeah, as mentioned already, you can use cryptographic operations to ensure some security properties, and you can also make use of administrative controls, for example, the way passwords are being handled.
There are some security software like Signal, for instance, that probe for weak points in the system.
Yes.
They look from the other potential hacks.
Yeah.
Are programs like these, are they mainly used for security? Are they effective as a security program? Or are they used by experienced hackers who make the administrator of the network believe that they are under service?
Yeah, and that's, of course, an important problem. So if you have these tools that you mentioned, like which enable you, I mean, the original aim of these tools was to enable the administrator to find out the holes in the system and then to fix them. But of course, as you said, if the wrong person uses the tool on your system, then they could find the attacks and they could exploit them. So this is always a two-edged sword, having this kind of tool. And the point is, I guess, that the administrators should use every tool that exists to find the holes and then to fix them, so that the bad guys cannot do it themselves. So you always have to be faster than the attackers. That's the point.
I'm asking because software like this, same for instance, it's available everywhere. Mm-hmm. So anyone who knows Linux can use it.
Yeah.
And so is it, in effect, when we look at statistics, are they being used for security or are they used more by hackers?
Both, I would say. So, But, I mean, I think that most sites or most companies, these tools are so well known already that the administrators actually use them, or they have consultants coming in with the tool and then looking at their system and pointing out the problems. So these well-known tools, I think the companies are already aware of the tools and are using them, and so in that sense they are good.
And just the fact that these tools are so well known, this kind of protection is better.
Yes, yeah. But of course, they may be companies who are not aware of these tools and who don't use them, and they may have a problem.
This is the problem you mentioned, that the stack is not
Yes, in fact. Yeah, okay, and so related to the earlier slides, so for example, you can use a security protocol to establish a secure channel over the internet. So the idea is that the internet itself is not trusted, but you can establish a communication between two points on the internet where you can trust the security of the communication by setting up this secure channel. And the idea is that you use the protocol to exchange a secret key between two parties, which is then used to encrypt the information that is being transmitted between the two parties. So this is one main concept in security defenses. And yeah, here for example the evaluation would be that the secure channel cannot be bypassed, so the traffic has to go through it, and it's transparent to applications. The approach does not have to know about the application level, so you can run any application over it, the secure channel. So it doesn't, the secure channel doesn't need to know about data, the meaning of the data. But what it cannot do is it cannot stop viruses, for example. So the virus can still be sent through the secure channel between two users, one of whom happens to have a virus and the other one may not have it yet. By sending the email through the secure channel, the virus is transmitted anyway. So that's the secure channel cannot enforce. Yeah, and also I mentioned already firewalls. So yeah, I think I explained this already. So yeah, as I said already, if you want to evaluate firewalls, then problem is that still sensitive information can be smuggled out using email, for example, or HTTP commands, and then the question comes up if you want to put your server inside the firewall or outside the firewall. So there are different security questions related to that. So these are things that you have to consider when you want to evaluate the security of your system looking at the firewalls. Just a few comments here. Yeah, and then if you want to protect your operating system regarding security, there are different things you can do regarding the memory or the file system. So for example, in the file side, there are ways of encrypting the data that is stored on files on your computer, which today actually work relatively well, because the computers get fast enough so that you can actually do the encryption and decryption while you work on the file in a way. So now this becomes possible actually. Of course you still have to make good use of your processor to make this feasible. And yeah, the evaluation of this point is that, as I mentioned already, the main popular operating system, Windows, has quite a few security problems, which are also published quite widely in a regular way. There are always being new flaws being found, which are then patched. But the question is how quickly they are found and what happens before they are found. Then you also have the question whether the operating system works together with the application layers like Java, for example. So these are a couple of points here. What can be a problem?
What's meant by protection at file level, not document content? The one before the last says protection only at the file level.
Yeah, so this means that here again the protection may not know about the data semantics. So a file may be protected, but you don't know if this file is an email which may have a virus as an attachment or something like that. And there may be specific security vulnerabilities being connected to the file, which arise from the fact that it is a specific kind of document. And so this you cannot solve this way, that you have to look at the application level. And then in the previous part I also mentioned database attacks, and now how can you counter them, for example using authorization systems, or making sure that there are administrative controls in place. So role-based access control, maybe I should explain this. This is a way of organizing access control, which makes use of roles, where roles are simply sets of users. So the idea is simply not to assign a right to a specific individual, but to assign rights to groups of individuals, for example, employees of a company or of a certain part of the company. They all get a specific right, and then you determine which individual is part of this group. So you have maybe I should
draw a picture. So your role is narrated in between the user and the access right. So a given role may be related to a given right, and then you determine which users are part of which roles. So a given user may have a certain role here, and this role may enable him to perform a certain right. So this is just an intermediate level, the role between users and rights.
Really just a simple concept, what it makes things more convenient, especially if you have a lot of individuals to administrate and a lot of rights also. Okay, yeah, and there again, if you evaluate these the security measures at this level, then these are effective provided that the query languages for your database are actually the only way that you can access the database, of course. And of course, if there are lower level ways to get to the data, then this doesn't help, as I mentioned already. And yeah, this is being said here, if you can get there through the operating system, then that's no use. But here it can actually protect the content of specific documents. And yeah, I also mentioned these APT attacks. So yeah, there are different things you can do against them, but I also don't want to explain them in detail. Okay, I think I will skip about the next couple of slides. So this was really meant as a background. But if, I mean, since you have the slides, if there are any questions, then you can ask them. Okay, so we come to the current situation of security defenses. Then, so the thing here is that, as mentioned already, you have security measures which may work well if you see them in isolation, but the problem is that they may not be coordinated in a secure way. And they may overlap, but they may not fit together perfectly. and you don't have an integration of the different mechanisms. So that's really again the point of this part of the tutorial, to stress the fact that with regard to security, you really have to look at the whole system and to integrate the different parts of the security aspects. And yeah, there are some approaches which try to do this in some products also, but I will not go into detail here. So now a bit about secure systems development. So until now I just pointed out a few technological solutions, and now about the question how you can develop security critical systems in a secure way. So firstly, you have to notice that the systems usually if you develop a system, it has to satisfy functional specifications, namely it has to do the things that it is supposed to do, obviously. But now if you look at security, then you also have to worry about non-functional specifications, meaning not what is being done, but how is it being done, namely securely in some way. And this is really a different thing. So this is also something which is not so easily testable. And otherwise, the way you ensure usually in practice that your system does what it is supposed to do is that you do extensive testing. But with security, the problem is that you cannot test every possible situation of the system, because it's just there are just too many possibilities. And if you only test, say, half of them, then there may be an attack in the remaining half. And the problem is, if there is a possibility for an attack, and if there's enough reason for someone to attack the system, then this person will find the possibility. You have to consider that. So this is the reason why non-functional aspects like security are really difficult to enforce. And also, you cannot show that something is not that there's no flaw in some way, because there may be ways for attack which you just don't think of at the moment. So you can only make sure that the attacks that you thought about are actually being prevented, but there may be attacks which look at different parts of the system or different level, or which may actually employ humans, collaborate with internal users or whatever. So yeah, that's really, there's no way to prove that the system is secure. You can also increase the trustworthiness of a system. And therefore, it's important that you, when you develop systems, you make sure that you do this in a way which increases the certainty that it will probably be secure, which is, as I said, you cannot prove that it's perfectly secure, but you want to maximize its security by using good development methods. And so this is opposed to the view that you just take some security component and you add it to your system, like SSL or whatever, and then you hope that it's secure that way. But this doesn't work, so you have to look at the whole system and develop it in a way that ensures the security. And so again, within the development, you then have to look at the different levels of the system, as pointed out already. And what is a good way of approaching the problem is to use object-oriented system development, because there you have a relatively clean separation between the data, the different parts in the system. And what you can use are so-called patterns, which are established ways of design, where you can also make use of the security engineering knowledge which was gained earlier by others. And one specific thing you can do is to establish access rights using so-called use cases. So these use cases are examples on a conceptual level for things that should be possible to do with your system, which is usually something that you find out together with the customer to establish what the system is supposed to do anyway, and from that you can also often derive the rights of the different users of the system. And then you have to map between the different levels in the system to make sure that security is actually being transferred between the different levels also. And it's important to consider security not just at one phase in the life cycle, but during the whole life cycle, meaning the life cycle, meaning firstly it's being developed, first designed, then developed, and then tested, then fielded, and also maintained. And through the whole of these different phases, you have to worry about security. For example, it doesn't help if your system is secure, let's say, until it is being fielded, but then during maintenance, some person can modify the system in a way which makes it completely insecure. So there, then you are in trouble anyway. So you have to look at the whole life cycle. And yeah, this again, this is the slide that I had earlier. So pointing to the different levels of the system, which you have to take care of also in system development. Yeah, a bit more about object-oriented modeling in this context. So the advantage is that it's a good conceptual level to model systems, and it's widely applicable. And you can abstract from details which are not relevant in a certain setting, and it's a rather intuitive way of doing things. So this applies also to the second main part of the tutorial, where I use this unified modeling language. This is a graphical language which is rather intuitive to use, and this is also used in this object-oriented context. And also, as I will show in that part of the tutorial, when you can use this kind of modeling with formal specifications, where formal means mathematically precise, and then you can use tools to find mistakes or vulnerabilities on the design level, and that is also is often a useful thing to do. Yeah, again, a bit more about patterns. I think I already said this on a couple of slides ago. So they're very useful generally, and more specifically in the field of security. It's a good way of using established knowledge. And this is an example for how such a security pattern could look like in this notation. But I will expand the notation more detail in the second main part. And yeah, again, this is a further example in this language, which I will not expand in detail here. And I think I will skip the... As I said already, you can use this kind of use case notation also to establish the access rights within the context of role-based access control. So, but I already explained this a couple of slides ago. And again, this is the way that it looks in this notation, but I think I will explain this in more detail in the second part of the tutorial. And yeah, this is again referring to this life cycle idea. So starting from the left, you firstly establish your requirements, then you do the analysis, you design your system, and you do the implementation. And Yeah, after the implementation, you have the security and testing. And actually, what is missing on the slide is what I mentioned earlier, the maintenance part. That should actually be also part of the life cycle. And you have to consider security all along this this life cycle. Yeah, this is also another example, which I don't think I'd be time to explain now in detail, but this is again an example for a possible system. And so this is what you would write down when analyzing your system. There may be different parts in the system, for example, a database and different levels like the operating system. And then you have to find out which parts of the system should be authorized to do which activities and which other parts of the system. But this is just to give a general idea of how this could look like. And so we come to the end of the first of the two halves of the tutorial. So the conclusion of that, internet-based systems are very flexible, and that's why they're being increasingly used so much. But this also brings a problem, of course, namely the complexity of the whole thing, which gives possibility for a lot of attacks. And you have to consider, again, security over all levels, starting from the highest level, but you have to map it down also to the lower levels. And again, you have to really take a unified view on security. And yeah, this is the part of the end of the first half, so maybe we have the tea break now.
Okay. So we have a break now.